From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Gen continues its Year of Darwin celebration with an interview with Dr. Kevin Verstreppen from the Flanders Institute of Biotechnology and the Catholic University of Louvain about junk DNA's important role in genomic evolution.
I'm John Sterling, Editor-in-Chief of Gen. Welcome to our sixth podcast that's specifically focused on our continuing celebration of the Year of Darwin. Dr. Kevin Verstreppen is an associate professor in biological engineering at the Catholic University of Louvain. He's also group leader in the Laboratory for Systems Biology at the Flanders Institute for Biotechnology. Dr. Verstreppen's research focuses on eukaryotic genetics, epigenetics, and evolution. His laboratory combines theory with experimentation to investigate the mechanisms underlying unstable, fast-evolving traits. Dr. Verstreppen, why did most scientists once believe that non-coding DNA was useless, leading the late Dr. Susumu Ono to label it junk DNA in 1972?
Right, that's a good question. It sort of goes back, I think, to the early days of genetics, if you will. Just around the time when people were able to measure the amount of DNA that every cell contains. And what people found is that the quantity of DNA in every cell really varies greatly between different organisms. And now that might not seem surprising, because I guess if you would ask most people, they would probably conclude that humans will have more DNA than yeast in every cell because we're more complex organisms, which is true. But the weird thing is that there's actually some organisms like lilies and salamanders that have like 10 or even 50 times more DNA than humans. So there is no clear correlation between the amount of DNA an organism has and its complexity, which was very counterintuitive. And of course, the easiest solution is then that, well, maybe a majority of the DNA isn't doing anything. And so that definitely helped coining this term. And then another thing that sparked it is that people discovered that a lot of the DNA actually exists of remnants of viruses, of retroviruses and transposons, which are also sort of virus-like pieces of DNA that jump around and copy themselves. So they had quite a few arguments to think of this DNA as sort of useless junk DNA.
When did this negative perception of junk DNA begin to turn around, and what was responsible for this change of opinion?
It's a good question. So let me first say that there's a funny anecdote, I think, that involves Francis Crick, who, together with Dr. Ono, was one of the big people behind the junk DNA idea. He once said that it's important to note that people call it junk DNA and not trash DNA, and he said, he was asked to explain himself because people just started laughing when he said it. He said, well, trash is something that at the end of the day I put out at my doorstep and I hope I won't ever see it again. Whereas junk is actually something that I'll put up in my attic because I don't need it, but maybe my kids will. So although junk sounds really bad, it's not as bad as trash. So even in these early days, people sort of thought about the possibility that they were missing something and that maybe it has some use. And I think it was spot on, but the view really only started to change in the modern days of genomics, where we cannot just measure the quantity of DNA, but we can actually really get the DNA sequence of an whole organism and compare it to the DNA sequence of other organisms, which is called genomics. And when we start comparing these, we can also look at how the junk DNA behaves and what role it might play. And now we do start seeing some roles for it. So it's really changing now.
You and your research team recently reported in Science that junk DNA has actually played a vital role in the evolution of the human genome. What did you discover?
I first have to step back and say that we did most of our experiments with yeast cells, which are sort of very similar cells as human cells, but of course they're much easier to do experiments with. So a lot of people do experiments with yeast. It's something that many people don't know, but a lot of cancer research, for example, is done in yeast cells. And so we also looked at yeast cells. And what we discovered is that there is, like any other cell, yeast cell has quite a bit of junk DNA. And some parts of this junk DNA is one particular class that has been known for a long time. They're called tandem repeats. These are pieces of DNA that are repeated head to tail. It's like stuttering DNA, if you will. There's a short sequence, and again, it's repeated head to tail, one piece after the other. And that kind of DNA has been known for a long time, and again, it was considered to be part of the junk DNA. Maybe it was even considered to be the ultimate junk DNA, because it's hard to imagine that this sort of stuttering DNA would have any function. First of all, because it seems to contain no information, because it's always the same sequence repeated. And secondly, because it's extremely unstable. That's also something that people knew. It's unstable because the numbers of repeats changes at very high frequencies, much more than normal DNA sequence. Normally, DNA is very stable, which is why humans keep on being humans when we generate offspring, right? But these tandem repeats are extremely unstable. The numbers change at high frequencies, and that is actually used, for example, to find killers, right? What they do is they just measure for a few different pieces of this junk DNA. They measure how many repeats are in there, and since the DNA is so unstable, the number that I have will be different from the number that you have, and it will be different from maybe a killer, and that's how we can easily sort of fingerprint through DNA which individual the DNA belongs to. Anyway, so that's all great, but what we now found is that pieces of this of these tandem repeats are sometimes located very nearby genes. So genes are the real coding, active pieces of DNA in our genome, the ones that contain information for proteins. And what we found is when these tandem repeats, this junk DNA, is really close to these genes, they affect the activity of a gene. Every gene sometimes will be switched off, and sometimes it needs to be switched on. And the tandem repeats regulate to what extent they can switch on. So it seemed like they're not just junk DNA, they actually regulate something in the genome.
Also, as you just mentioned about the tandem repeats changing frequently when DNA is copied, you reported that local DNA packaging is affected and gene activity, as you just explained, is altered. How does all this impact the evolution of an organism?
So what we found is that when the number of DNA repeats changes, it changes how the DNA is packaged. One thing you should realize is that every human cell, for example, contains 2 meters of DNA. And that goes into a cell that's like a tenth of a millimeter long, right? And then in that cell there's a nucleus, which is even smaller, and that contains all these 2 meters of DNA. So you need to wrap this DNA up. You need to package it. And it's wrapped around proteins. It really has a very restricted and defined packaging structure. And the way this DNA is packaged also determines, to a large extent, which pieces can be active and which are not active. And so what we find is that these repeats, or the number of repeats you have, really help defining the local packaging structure. And if you have more repeats, the DNA will become less densely packed, which means that the gene can become more active. So the second part of the story is that these repeats are very unstable, as I said before. This means that whenever we generate offspring, whenever we make kids, our kids will have different numbers of repeats than we have, which also means that their genes will probably have different activities because the packaging of the DNA changed a bit. And that generates variability, so that means that our kids look like us, but they're not completely the same, right? And, of course, that is really the feeding ground for evolution, this variability, because some of them will be better off, maybe, and some of them will be less fit, and then we all know the theory of survival of the fittest. So we think that these repeats really generate variability in gene activity that can be beneficial in evolution.
In your science paper, you've discussed that tandem repeats may facilitate evolutionary timing of gene expression by affecting local chromatin structure. What type of experiment did you carry out to come to that conclusion?
Right. So this this local chromatin structure that you're talking about, that's exactly this DNA packaging. So what we did to really prove that these unstable repeats generate variability and that could allow fast evolution is we took yeast cells and we took genes that have tandem repeats very close to them naturally, and we just replaced those genes with, for example, antibiotic resistance genes, so genes that make yeast cells resistant to antibiotics. And now, the thing is that the more active these genes are, the better yeast can survive when you give them antibiotics. And so we used these yeast cells, we added antibiotics to a just about lethal concentration. And what we found is if we put these antibiotic genes close to tandem repeats, the yeast cells very quickly can evolve to high activity levels of this antibiotic gene. But when you put these genes, these antibiotic genes, when you put them far away from any junk DNA, from any repeats, these cells and their offspring are not able to really activate the genes very quickly. They cannot evolve new activity levels of the gene very quickly. And so they fail to grow on the antibiotic and eventually they die. So it really shows that in, under the right circumstances, having a repeat near a gene may really help you to quickly adapt to a new situation or a new stress.
Based on the results of this paper, what do you have planned for the next phase of your research?
Well, we, of course, have many things in line, and not everything is related to what we do. But here in particular, without telling you any secrets, because I have to be careful here, but here in particular, we're definitely interested in following up on possible applications, right? And again, without going into details, we are interested in investigating if we can use these variable, unstable tandem repeats to create microorganisms, yeast cells and maybe other microorganisms, that are better able to adapt to new circumstances and maybe also better able to adapt to industrial circumstances and do the job that humans want them to do it quicker and better than the ones that cannot evolve as quickly. So that's really one of the routes that we're interested in.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.